I'm going to do two things. One is mine, and then do something a little different. A cover poem, which I don't usually do. I'm keeping with it the... there's a poet who was a great early influence on me because of... And will also, this poem will figure largely in the next thing that I write because of this poet's connection with birds and with mental health. I'm writing a new thing about those topics, and this poet has something to say to both of those things. So I'm going to do his poem first and then one of my own and talk about risk-taking. This is something I not only don't usually do cover poems, I've never done this particular poem ever before. This will be the first time I'm doing it in front of an audience. So yeah, that's inspiring. Also from memory, is there anything else I need to tell you? I think you'll recognize it and after the first line. Is there anything else I need to say? Why this poet? The stuff that I write, aside from it having zoological themes, which has been the case throughout, you know, from everything I've ever written, he writes essentially dramatic monologues in verse. And I've often felt like it's sort of like theater, what I do. It's kind of like poetry and finding ways to put that together, even though it was written, you know, in the late 1800s or whenever ever it was. Once, upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, as I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "To some visitor," I muttered, rapping at my chamber door. "Only this and nothing more." Distinctly I remember it was in that bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I sought the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now to still the beating of my heart I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more." Suddenly my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," I said, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door, darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore? Thus I whispered, and the echo murmured back the word, Lenore? Only this and nothing. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning. Soon again I heard the tapping somewhat louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more." Open then I threw the shut, when with many flirt and flutter in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of palace just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad spirit into smiling. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I say, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marvel this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast, upon the sculpted bust above his chamber door, with such a name as nevermore. But the raven sitting lonely on that placid bust spoke only that one word, as though his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before. In the morning he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, and doubtless that I when it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master whose unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his song one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope one melancholy burden bore, of never, never more. But this heavy bird stick rhyme. But the raven still beguiling my sad fancy into smiling straight, I pulled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking, what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking evermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the bird, whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, on, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining with the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lighting, lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed by some unseen censer, swung by seraphim, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Seraphim, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I said, thy God hath led me by these angels, he has sent thee respite in the Nepenthe. From thy memory of the door, quaff, oh, quaff this kind Nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me truly, I implore. Quoth the raven. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still with bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign. tide of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul has spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit that bust upon my door. Take thy beak from out my heart and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, evermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of palace just above my chamber door, and his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor, and my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
I'm going to do one more. This one is Sweating Like a Horse. This one is the title track from, I was really trying to decide. I didn't want to choose something people had seen 100 times, but I think I already did something that no one's seen before. Now I can do something some of you might have heard 100 times. This is the title track from my first solo show called Sea Peach. It's about love and about a sea creature that lives on the bottom of the ocean, rooted there in place. Do I have everything I could possibly need? Yeah. So this is another 7-minute poem about love and loss and madness and pining for things past, and zoology. I put that in there too. This is called Sea Peach. Love breathes underwater like sea creatures, slow in how it teaches, gliding and grazing like a graceful ray, or an opening anemone, raising tendrils in time to the pulse of the sea and drawing them in again. Its only enemy, that toothy little fish, anxiety, for years have followed me, nipping my Achilles from behind, to remind me of times I was blind to love that never left, when buried, bereft, my heart burrowed low, so no one else could bruise it, didn't know that hiding was the only way to lose it. Since the Ice Age, she's been down in the basement, digging through boxes, trying to find something she thought she had lost. The original skin of shape-shifting foxes, the thing she swore not to lose at any cost. She'd come to believe she was not a real person, maybe a creature someone put a curse on, assuming human form to learn a lesson. A shapeshifter, a drifter, more at home, roaming open fields alone, than tethered to another and living under cover in a room no matter how warm. She'd come to miss the furred perk of her alert ears, the magic broomstick of her tail, her padded paws turning circles thrice before she sleeps. But whatever original skin she was born with is hidden away somewhere in a box, so no human lover would ever discover she's not actually a girl, but a fox. One who walks and talks like a regular girl, but if she falls in love, it's the end of the world for her. The permanent transfer from one life form to another. If love ever uncovered her original skin, well, she might never fit back into it again. Slip into it and slink out the door. She might never do the same as she Then she met you. She wasn't afraid. They didn't feel like a choice she had made at first, more like kind of emotion. or expulsion from the secret garden of her discontent. It must have been heaven sent. She prayed for answers from the sky, but looked to earth for her reply. The nodding god of yes, who was so welcome in your eyes. Your heart beat a happy tattoo, and she opened the door, and yes, it was true. Nothing was the same as it had been before you. Like shiny scales of goldfish, you opened eyes on her skin, and they wept out oceans lying within. But old loves fled away to make room for a new one. Didn't think she had it left in her to even pursue one. Recent questions as to whether she was even human. And letters that she didn't send. Love she swore would never end. Apology calls she didn't make. Love lost her tossed by blind mistake. And all the roads she didn't take. Love is the one who's hard to find. Love's the one who knows your mind. Love's the one who feeds your soul. Love's the one to have and hold. But hold a minute, hold how? There's 100 hungry ways to hold her up or hold her down. Will she still be able to get around? Will she be able to hold her ground? So she digs down deep to the bottom of the box to find the original hide of the fox. And it's there, all right. Despite paranoia, some lover would thieve it. Slip it on and slink away. The choice was always hers to retrieve it. But who wears furs these days? Perhaps her fears had fallen out of fashion. Perhaps there were more human ways of nourishing a passion. But look, there beneath the fox, at the bottom of the box, a book about biology. And being a student of life, she took hold of it in her own hands. She let it unfold in hopes it would offer that lesson to teach. It fell open to the name Halocynthia oranthium, or in more common terms, the sea peach. The sea peach is a creature who looks like a heart living at the bottom of the ocean, rooted in place by a sucker on its underpart, grounded, holding steady as devotion. Its evolution has chosen this sort of lifestyle. Halocynthia oranthium in luminous hues of a peach chrysanthemum by sublime chance or divine artistry, with two branching siphons raised overhead, like the aorta and the pulmonary artery, one to take things in, one to give things out. The sea peach teaches what the heart is about. Through its two siphons, the sea peach feeds, breathes, and breathes. Taking in food and oxygen, inspiration, exhaling tiny tadpoles to the tide, who reroute themselves elsewhere in some other place. All this from a creature who has no face. No crises of identity, the ability to simply be. No mind, but no matter, none of the clatter and chatter of the human brain. No broken-hearted sea peach ever drove itself insane. And its offers of asylum have no locks on either side. So she chose the book of life. Closed the box on the fox hide. Phylum Chordata. The sea peach is a chordate, just like me, and the marine iguana, the great horned toad, and the chimpanzee. Which means we all have spinal structures, just like you. Giant squid, the gerbil, and the caribou. Each who shares the chordate name starts out looking pretty much the same, at least in our prenatal form. Then we start to shift our shapes after we're born. From guinea hens to wide-mouthed bass, we all begin as tadpoles, with something like a head and something like a tail. Headstrong and wriggling, just like the rest of us. Parch, prairie chickens, Gila monsters, arctic perch, and hippopotamus. Cheetahs, horses, salamanders, goats, and stoats, and geese, and ganders. And the sea peach, too, to name but a few. We all start out from heads and tails, but it's here in evolution that the sea peach derails. It doesn't grow a spine, and it doesn't grow a face. It only grows a sucker to ground itself in place. Like a heart who hears the murmur of its purpose here on Earth. It finds a spot of ocean floor and settles toward rebirth. She studies the sea peach a very long time, until it seems she'd almost become one. Not in the sense of losing her spine, but the sense of trusting in someone. First comes a voice, and then comes a choice. Well, maybe it comes from within, and it ripples without, and quietly it tells you what your life is about in murmured whispers thumping somewhere in your chest. Or it comes from without, and it touches within, and it opens up a million tiny eyes on your skin. And you can see clearly now.